Welcome to Man Strong Podcast. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We talk about just what being a good, mature male means. We're not ashamed of masculinity. We're not afraid to be males, no matter what the media and the teachers of the day and all these other whiny little people think. Men are needed, and we're always going to be needed. No matter how much technology you get, the idea of men to raise children, the idea of men to protect people, it's just the way it is. It's been that way for eons, and it's going to be that way for the next eons. What I want to talk about tonight is micromanaging. See, I believe micromanaging is bullying. Bullies are not something I'm very appreciative of. Bullies is not what a mature male will strive for. So if you're a micromanager, you need to let that sink in a little bit. You're trying to control everything. Stop it. Well, before we get into tonight's show, I want to think about our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They have copper tags that you can use on everything from trapping, really cool jewelry. I use them on trout lines and noodles that I go catfishing with. I use them on my brim traps. I use them on my traps. I use, you find a lot of different things you can use for the trap tags. Plus, he's got a full line of trapping supply. He's got all kind of catfish bait, which he now has my catfish bait. I've got two more batches brewing. So hopefully we can get a normalcy into this as far as product goes. Plus, he carries other people's catfish bait. He carries deer lures and scents. He carries my tactical nuke. He's got a full line of predator calls. Just really good people to deal with. You can talk to Alan, the owner, or Alan, the employee. He's normally who you're going to get on the phone. You'll find out they ship pretty much every day when you put an order in, and they're honest. And that's something we all need to deal with more and more today. So if Alan says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. And in my opinion, that already puts him in the top 1% of businesses I deal with on a daily basis. So, micromanaging is bullying. Now, I've dealt with a lot of micromanagers in my life, and there's been a few times that I've leaned towards the dark side of being a micromanager when it comes to certain things. And guess what? It never works out very well. It just never does. Everybody's been around micromanagers at work, and I want you to think of how stifling that is to the workforce. Someone's always looking over your shoulder, making these little comments, how something could be better. You know, they're the peanut gallery that always sits in the back going, ay, about what someone should be doing, should have done. You know, they got perfect money marketing quarterback eyes. But, you know, they're just always in everybody's business. They want everybody to do it the way that they want it to do. They want the forms filled out the way they want them. They want the procedures on the phone. And it does a lot of negative things. And if you've ever been in that situation, I promise you, you know how frustrating and stifling it is. Now, when I was in the Army, you would think that that would be micromanaging. And interestingly enough, it's not to a point. So what happens if you were not in the military? And I know everybody's seen movies of the military, and you hear orders and all that type stuff. All that stuff can be somewhat true, but at least in the Army, I don't know about the Marines, I don't know about Navy, and I don't know about Air Force. But the way the military works is directives most of the time. Now, you will have orders, but most of the time it's a directive. A directive is, go take that hill, go set this ambush, you need to go snag somebody, you know, kick in some doors over here because there's a bad guy in there. We need a cell phone, stuff like that. Now, that directive comes down from division or brigade or company command or something like that, and it filters down pretty much the same directive till it gets to the unit. And the unit then breaks that down from platoon, squad, company, all that different type thing. And it breaks it down into smaller and smaller units. Now, when it gets down to the units, this is where micromanaging is not really in the military. Because what happens is, you can have two squads doing a mission, the same mission. And they will kind of go over and rehearse what they're going to do. But each team does their own thing the best way that they see fit to complete the mission. So it's not really micromanaging, but like everything else in life, you're going to have micromanagers, and we had some in the Army. And again, it never worked out very well because micromanagers think they know what's going to happen, and they very rarely do, or they think they know what the response of something is, and it very rarely does. Kind of like Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody's got a plan, they get hit in the nose. So allowing people maneuverability in the military is very important. I do think that it's different in the Marines than it is in the Army. And I'm not putting the Marines down, some of the toughest people on the face of the earth. But their strategy, to me, seems more micromanaging. And the reason I say this is we did a force on force one time up in Alaska. It was cold, granted, it was 30 below zero. We're out in the middle of nowhere. There's 6 foot of snow. We're used to it. And they come up and we're going to do force on force against the Marines. Now, the interesting thing that happened in that exercise became very clear is what seemed to be a lot more micromanaging from the top all the way down to the last private in line is if everything went well, it went well. If anything falls apart, they have to wait to be micromanaged to figure out what to do. Well, see, in the Army, we lived in chaos all the time because that was not our form of function. It was more by the seat of your pants, which is the way combat is. So when things went wrong, when we were going against Marines, we could immediately, on a squad level or platoon level, in just 30 seconds, completely change directions and completely come up with a different plan and act. So you can't do that with micromanaging. And what happened, it seemed to me, from the Marines is when their plan of attack failed, they had too much downtime trying to figure out what to do because they have to wait for all this micromanaging to come down, and they got stomped in this particular exercise because they couldn't adapt to what was going on in the battlefield. Where in the Army, it seemed like, because we were disciplined in certain areas, but our daily training was very chaotic, the way that we went about it. And that's the first time when I was in E4 at the time, I saw how practical that was instead of trying to detail every single thing out from somebody at the top down. So micromanaging doesn't work for work, and it doesn't work in the military. I've seen a lot of parents that are micromanagers, and I think you're really hurting your children by doing that, and it's just not a good thing. You need to let children learn how to solve problems. And micromanagers do not allow their children to solve problems. They solve it for them and give them a direct order on what to do about it, or they give them the answer. That's a no-go. We've all had friends probably that are micromanagers. They get upset if anything is not the way they want it. They get upset on all kind of weird stuff that doesn't make any sense. I've got a core group of friends that I run around with, and I'm amazed just from when I look at it from an observing point of view, none of us micromanage anybody else. Now, we all have are certain things that we're better known for, or we're better, I'm not going to say educated in, but maybe have more experience. And then some people are in control of us being there because it's their job and stuff like that. But the cool thing about having a core group of friends that are not micromanagers is everything runs so smoothly. And by not having a micromanager, during the day, even 4 or 5 of us may completely flip the script on what's going on and kind of take control for a short period of time or for a specific situation. And then you kind of, because that's kind of your expertise, and it goes back to whoever it was, and there's never any hard feelings and stuff like that. That's the way work should be. That's the way the Army should be. That's kind of the way parents should be, and definitely that's the way friends should be. Because we're not in an ego contest. We're not trying to, dominate one or the other. And that's what a micromanager does, is dominate. That's the reason I say bullying is micromanaging. And bullying is never something that a mature male strives to be. He strives to be the opposite. He strives to be a leader. Leader does not micromanage. I don't know where this concept came from. I don't know if it's college or just idiots in business. I don't know where this comes from. Leaders do not micromanage. Leaders lead. That's a different, there's a totally different concept there. So what are the effects of micromanaging? And I want you to think about this in very personal terms. Are you micromanaging? Are you always, as a dad, telling your children what they will do at all times? How they will do it? If they do something different than you, do you get on to them for that? You need to think about that, because that's not really what a leader does. And your job as a male, no matter what the feminists say, is to be a leader of the home. You give people enough slack to get the directive done, whatever that may be, their own way. And it doesn't have to be your way. But what are the effects of people that do that? Now, see, one of the biggest effects straight off the bat that I think everybody needs to come to terms with is you come across this as a overzealous Nazi little peckerhead. Now, is that really what you want to be known as? Really? Because you've been around little Nazi peckerheads. And do you ever do what they really say? No. And if you have to, because they have authority over you, you wait till they get out of sight, and then it goes away anyway. See, the way I look at it, men that try to be micromanagers in business, family, parents, all that, really what they are is your bitches. And I don't mean that in a bad towards a feminine way. We all know what that word means. You're just being a little whiny bitch. You got to have your way. It's always got to be your way. Grow up. Seriously. I think there's several reasons people become micromanagers. One of them is they're afraid. They have real fear and not understanding what leadership is, so to the point where they're petrified that they're going to find out, or someone else is going to find out, that they are not as smart as they think they are. So you got to control everything about everything. You got to have a narrative that you're pushing. You've got to have the way that it's going. And guaranteed, someone that micromanages never takes responsibility when their process falls apart. It's always because somebody else. Another sign of an immature male. But it's, to me, I think most people are afraid that you're not as smart as you think you are. Because even as a parent, I guarantee you, if you let your children solve some of their own problems, they're going to do it in a very different way than you do it. And you know what, parents? Sometimes they're going to do it in a much more intelligent and logical way than you will off the top of your head. That's scary. Business owners and managers in business, if you've got 20 people in there, I promise you half of them are smarter than you anyway, regardless of what your rank is in that business. You're not even allowing the talent that you have to build up your department or your business the way that it should, because you're being a bully. Not cool. One thing it does is it destroys others' ability to grow. See, when you lock people into things like when you see really hardcore socialism and communism, you have people where everything of their life is dictated by the state. Everything is. You can have a better idea, a better product, but it doesn't matter because you're not allowed to do that. And when we see it from a capitalism way and a communist way, we can kind of grasp that. So, like when you look at a lot of the cars that came out of the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc when they were all still communist, Their cars really sucked. They were ugly. They were uncomfortable. They were slow. They broke down all the time. But that was the only way that a micromanager can control everything, is they came up with the cars. And if someone were to come up with a better design, well, it's going to, you know, probably make them look bad. So they refused to have anything better than what they were going to do. And you had crappy products coming out of Russia and the Eastern Bloc. That's where the Yugo came from, for goodness sake. You do not let people grow when you micromanage them. That's your employees, that's your kids, that's your wife, that's your friends. That is not a way to be a leader or a grown man. It destroys innovation, kind of like we were saying. The more stricter the rules are on anything, the more innovation is destroyed. Because there's no wiggle room. There's no way to test. There's no way to try something. That's what micromanaging kills. That's the reason conservatives, libertarians, get so upset with the idea of a big state. It doesn't work. Why is Rockwood, Tennessee locked down during the COVID virus when this whole time we've had seven people with it? As far as I know, no deaths. But because New York and Detroit is, having a hard time, why are we locked down? See, that's micromanaging. That doesn't make any sense. Because if we were having this and they weren't in New York City, you can guarantee they wouldn't be locked down. See, it all rolls downhill and it never works. You get no respect when you're a micromanager. None. Your employees don't respect you. Your other people that you're partners with will not respect you. Your wife will not respect you. Your children will not respect you. The coaches will not respect you of your kids. Nobody respects a micromanager. And it's almost like micromanagers are impervious to the eye rolls and the sighs and that they get, just because people, it sucks to be around somebody like that. So you get no respect. If you don't get any respect and it comes a time when you need to be a leader, guess what? No one is going to follow you. And if they do, they do it half-ass. And they'll do just enough to keep their job. And they'll do just enough to get you fired. Or they will cut your throat behind your back. I've been around some great leaders in my time. Great leaders. I had a friend that I wasn't supposed to be a friend with because he was an officer and I was enlisted. We went over to a foreign country. We stayed out in the jungle way too long during rainy season. And we all started getting really, really bad feet problems. And we were getting stung by scorpions and wasps we've never seen before. And it was just bad. It just got bad because we stayed out there so long. We came back in, we kind of got cleaned up, we got, new gear, took showers, got 2 or 3 days of rest. Well, the feet of everybody still tore up. And this friend of mine was a captain of another company. He wasn't even a friend of mine. He wasn't my commander. And he told the battalion commander that he is not sending his troops out for a training exercise when they're physically screwed up. Now, he could have been kicked out of the military for doing that. But he didn't. But he stood up for his men. See, a micromanager would go, "Yes, sir, I'll make sure they do it. I don't give a crap if their feet fall off." And they go out there and they make them do it, kind of like they made our company do it. But after that, if that company commander would have asked his guys to walk through the fires of hell for him, they would have done it. Our company commander would have told him to go pound sand. Leadership is super important, not just in the military, but in families and business, with friends, with just normal people you meet. Someone's going to be a leader of every group that you've ever been in. Some because of position, and think about how that really pisses you off when it's a dumb person that's got rank over you. and they're not a leader. The biggest one that frustrates me is it hurts people to be problem solvers. See, I think part of every man's job is to be a teacher. And the only way that sometimes you can teach is you can give enough guidance to let the person fail or succeed or come up with a different way than you would and then figure out if it's actually better or worse or why later. In the armor, we have after action reviews after every mission. And we talk about what worked, what didn't, how could we get better, this, that, and the other. It was an amazing thing that businesses ought to do, but I think the leaderships are too scared to do it because during that one particular time frame, you could call a lieutenant pretty much a dumbass without calling him a dumbass, and you couldn't get in trouble. See, I think micromanagers in the business world are scared to death to let people under them actually speak their mind without any type of repercussions for it. Same with dads and moms and, dads towards moms and kids and all kind of crazy stuff. You have to let people learn to solve problems. If you're a parent and you're always telling your kid what to do, you're hurting that kid. They have to be problem solvers. You can guide them in the journey of figuring out how to solve that problem, but let them solve the problem. And if they solve it wrong and it's not something that's going to cause them to lose an arm or a leg, let them do it the wrong way. They will figure that crap out. Kids are smart if you let them be problem solvers. The problem is now we just have a bunch of regurgitators. If they can't find it on Google, obviously it can't be done. And they got to find a way on Google to get anything done. How do you put it in a toilet? Well, you go to YouTube. That's not learning. That's just regurgitating. Let them build some stuff. Let them do some things. Let them play their own games with their own rules and you stay the crap out of it. Let them be problem solvers. Now, to a micromanager, that's insanity. Because micromanagers have to micromanage everything. And think about kids today. They're micromanaged at school. They're told what they can and cannot say, what they can and cannot think, where they will and will not stand or sit. They go to sports after that where everything is micromanaged. Parents are so scared that they're not going to get the high score on some test to get into college that they end up doing it for them so the kids don't learn anything. But they go to college, and the colleges work off a curve system now because they realize nobody can really pass college if they didn't work off a curve system. So this whole time, they've never had to be a problem solver till they go into a business as an employee or self-employed. And now you've got to figure out a problem on your own. It's not out of a textbook or not with someone authority telling you to go here or do this. Meltdown. You're not helping. You got to be a teacher and allow people to solve their own problems. And one part of that is most people want to sound like they're more intelligent than they really are, so they want to give people answers to questions they may or may not really know anyway. You can see this on Facebook. Just go ask a question on anything you want to. People that have read about it will tell you what to do. People that saw a video will tell you what to do. People that heard somebody say something will tell you what to do. And if you start really probing, you'll find out they've never done it. But they'll give you all kind of advice. Not people you want to listen to. You want to be the one that if you know the answer, see, one of the biggest blessings I had in my life, I'm not going to say one of the biggest, but one of the biggest professional blessings I had in my life is when I started making animal sense, a guy took notice of me, Dave Edwards from New York. And he came and smelled all my lures like he did everybody else. Mine didn't smell like everybody else's because I wasn't getting my lure sense off of Google or an old Bill Nelson formula cheat sheet or something like that. And he started asking me questions of why I was using this or that, and I would tell him. And he took an interest in my ability to be better at making lures. Now, what Dave did, not being a micromanager, is he would always give me enough information to fail or succeed and figure it out. He never gave me the answer. He would give me clues to the answer. Then I'll have to go figure it out. And in that process, I would learn way more about chemicals and glands and tinctures and all this other stuff that I deal with on a daily basis than I would have ever done if he would have told me just because he liked me. See, Dave was a tremendous teacher. He was not a micromanager. He let me run down rabbit holes knowing that it was not going to work. And he would tell me later that, yeah, I knew that wasn't going to work, but you need to figure that out on yourself. Sometimes it was highly frustrating. But I'm so glad that he took interest in me, and I'm so glad that he took interest in me and taught me the way that he did. Because it had been real easy for him just to want to sound like he knew everything, which he knew a whole lot more than I did and most lure makers alive today. But he made me figure it out on my own. Now, when I have a problem, I know how to solve problems when it comes to making animal sense. When I have problems in business, I can figure out how to solve problems. I can turn on a dime, just like we did in the military, because no one's micromanaging me. And I'm not going to micromanage somebody else. So if you are a micromanager, guys, be honest with yourself about it. And that's something you need to work on. To be a better dad and a better husband and a better boss, that's something you need to work on, and a better friend. Trust me, life gets way more interesting when you let other people come up with decisions and actions. Sometimes worse, sometimes better. But it's way more interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about fitness. I've had this thing going on for about the last, I guess about 4 weeks. And I couldn't quite figure it out. I'm doing the conjugate system, a little bit modified because of my age, and I'm not a competitive power lifter, don't have any intention to be. And I like a lot of the strongman type stuff because it's really functional, not in the frou-frou functional like you see people on one leg with a 5-pound weight, not that type thing. But they're just awkward movements, and it builds a lot of core strength and tendons and stuff like that. So I've been really pushing the farmer's walks. Over the last month, usually, and it would take a couple of days for it to happen before I really realized that anything was going on. My right knee just kind of felt weird. It didn't really hurt. It just felt kind of inflamed. There's not a lot of pain. I'm still walking, stuff like that. But I couldn't quite figure out what it was. I mean, was it something I was doing when I was box squatting or using my belt squat or you know, in a bad position when I'm doing deadlifts. I couldn't quite figure it out. Well, day before yesterday, I figured it out. When I started really going up in weight on farmer's walk, for me, I can physically handle about 205 pounds in each hand. So that's 410. Throwing my body weight, that's what, 680 pounds that I'm walking with. But there's something, not on my left knee, but on my right knee, that's not strong enough to do that. And I felt it more this last time than I did any other time. And I haven't squatted since then, because it hadn't been time to squat yet. So I'm like, well, that's got to be what it is. So I've got a decision to make. I cannot do heavy farmer's walks, and there's a lot of advantages to do them. Or I need to back off of the weight and build up to this 205 pounds in each hand to do it. You know, because I was trying to, I don't know why one knee is weaker than the other knee. I have no earthly idea. I mean, you're carrying the same weight in each hand, right? So my way of going about this is I'm going to back down to about probably 135 for 2 weeks and see if I have any knee issues. Then I'm going to go up to like 185, and I'm going to find just where it starts tinging a little bit. Then I'm going to back that down with some poundage, and I'm going to do that repeatedly for about 2 months. Whatever needs to be strengthened in my right knee, I'm going to give it a chance to strengthen and adapt. I think that's the best way that I can go about this. So if you're benching and something's not feeling right, is it, I'm not saying you shouldn't bench. I'm saying figure out what's causing it to do. Your shoulders out of position, or you're letting your elbows get too wide, or your triceps weak, or your tendons weak. And then whatever that is, build that particular thing up. Which brings me to something I probably should have talked about from the very beginning, but I didn't, because by the time I started doing this podcast, I've already pretty heavy into lifting weights and stuff like that. But I want to take just a few minutes to talk about getting started lifting weights or getting in shape. The best way that I can explain what you're trying to do from going from out of shape to in shape is, one, you can't have the American mentality that you want it now. Your body does not work that way. As you get older, it definitely doesn't work that way. So every time you do something, whether it's go for a 30-minute walk, swim, lift weights, do push-ups, ride a bike, pull a sled, whatever it is, you need to understand what you're doing with those, because some days you're going to be better than others. Some days you're going to feel great. Some days it's going to not flow as well. And you've got to work this out. So think about what you're doing from the very beginning as you're building a castle. Now, a castle is not built in a day for a particular reason. It starts off with a foundation, and then you've got all of these rocks. And the way that you build, if you ever watch a rock mason work, he starts off with a level ground, and he goes all the way around the castle with a layer of rock. And then he adds the next layer of rock. And anything that's weak anywhere in there, it's going to cause problems with the castle. The parts are going to fall off. So the way that I would like you to look at your fitness is, every day that you do something, it doesn't have to be hardcore. It doesn't have to be pushing yourself to the limit. It doesn't have to be the best workout, because they're not always going to be that way. What you're doing is you're just laying a brick or laying a rock at a castle. The next exercise or the next workout is just another brick in that castle, and another brick in that castle, and another brick in that castle, and another brick in that castle. So before you know it, you've got a hell of a foundation built up before you start worrying about, the death holes that the arrows come out of, and the spirals and the part that you walk around the top of the wall. Before you start worrying about all of that stuff that everybody wants to get excited about when it comes to exercise, being jacked and tanned and looking good and feeling strong and all that, you've got to, just like everybody else does, lay those rocks over and over and over again. And consistency, I do believe, is the key. So every time you do something, you're just getting a little bit more fit, a little bit more fit, a little bit more fit. Lo and behold, a couple of years down the road, you're doing some things you thought you could never, ever do at your age, or that you couldn't do even when you were younger. Because at 51, without a doubt, I'm stronger now than I was when I was in the military, without a doubt. The way I did it was not really putting as much thought into it, except I was really fat, I was really out of shape, and I knew that if I just tried to go in there and be Arnold Schwarzenegger in a day, I'd probably end up in the hospital or something tore off. So I started small. And this is what I want to talk to you about. Starting small, in the way that most people look at fitness, especially if you're thinking about weightlifting, that's not what anybody wants to hear. They want to know how to bench 300 pounds next week. How are they going to pull 500 pounds off the floor? How are they going to get big rippling biceps where all the girls are just oohing and ahhing, and then you'll find out girls really don't care about your biceps? Or how do they get their abs showing? Like in a month. And people start this crazy attack of fitness, and they get burnt out or they get hurt and they just fade away. See, the reason a castle is different than the modern way that people look at exercise is, if you understand that you're building up this base and then you're making it stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, it allows you to see what you're doing with a purpose instead of just, I want to be whatever it is your goal is. So think of what you're doing on a daily basis as just laying rock. And eventually, you got this big, beautiful, strong castle that can withstand attack. That's your goal. Whether it's more strength orientated, like powerlifting or strongman, or it's more hypertrophy because you want to look a certain way and you go more towards the bodybuilding or more like a CrossFit type thing, which I definitely wouldn't start off with, or you just want to be more limber, you want to be able to walk up and down the steps, whatever it is, starting off has to be slow because you're an organism. And like any organism, you're used to whatever you're used to. If you're used to shoving potato chips down your gullet all day and watching 5-6 hours of TV, that's what your organism is used to doing. When you start adding stress to that organism, it's going to fight you. Because anything you do above the potato chips and the TV now starts becoming almost like pain. You just try to stay away from it. The more you do that, the better you feel. You start getting a little bit more excited about it, and you want to do more of it. But at the beginning, the organism does not want to change. And like any organism, it adapts to stress. So if you're sitting on a TV, if you're overweight and you're eating potato chips and you're watching TV all day, trying to go and pick up a bodybuilding program, working 6 days a week, 2 hours a day, you change your diet drastically all at once, dude, you're going to be one mixed, you're going to be one tore up puppy in about a week. That's not what you want. You want to start slow. You want to just go, okay, this is where the castle goes. I need to lay a rock. So starting slow, I would highly recommend doing body weight exercises, maybe with some bands. That's it. For about 4 months. Now you may think, well, that ain't going to do nothing. If you clean up your diet a little bit, you start moving some more, you will be amazed the difference in your body in 4 months of doing that, because you will adapt to that stress. So body weight exercises. And everybody that listens is going to be at a different level. Can you do 10 push-ups in a row? Can you do 5? Can you do 1? Can you do 20? Well, if you can do 10 or 20, just set a goal 4 days a week for the next 4 months, you're doing 100 push-ups a day. In just a couple of weeks, you're going to notice such a big difference. And I know you're going to get online and people are going to say push-ups are dangerous. On them people. We did tens of thousands of them in the Army, and we're fine. Keep your elbows in. If you want to know the correct way to do a push-up, go up to something heavy and try to push it. If you'll notice, your elbows are tucked in next to your rib cage and you try to push out. That's how you do a push-up. You see people with their arms straight out, go try to push something heavy that way and you can't do it. That's how people get hurt. So your arms aren't up, you know, your elbows aren't up at your shoulder levels. They're actually down at your rib cage. You can find all this out online. Just do 100 push-ups a day, 4 days a week for 4 months. Find a chair, depending on how bad out of shape you are. Can you get out of a chair without using your arms? You know, and be honest with yourself. Find a chair that has no arms and don't have anything around you and just sit down in it, then stand straight up. What you're going to find, most guys that are 45 to 65 are going to look more like something trying to slither out of a hole because they got snakes coming up there like Indiana Jones is behind them. They physically can't stand up that well because they're weak. Well, if you can do one, do that 30 times a day for a month. Then do 50 times a day for a month. You're talking something that's going to take you just a few minutes. In a couple of months, once you get to where you can stand up out of the chair 100 times a day and you're not sore and it's just easy, start doing lunges. One-leg lunges. Have something you can keep your balance on. Lunges. Do some crunches. Find something that weighs, I guess again, it depends on how bad out of shape you are, and you're going to have to be honest with yourself and let your ego not get involved with this. Just find something like 2 5-gallon buckets with water in it and, you know, carry them a little ways. One hand or two hand. One hand's actually better because it makes your core work. Something really simple like that. Now, I like the idea of bands. If you can do pull-ups, then start doing some pull-ups. Most people that are my age that try to do a pull-up have a very hard time at that because they're very weak. The easy way to get around that is if you've got a bar, a piece of pipe, or anything, just put it 3 or 4 feet off the ground. Kind of get under it. So it looks like you're doing a pull-up, then put your legs way in front of it so you're like on a 45-degree angle. See if you can do a pull-up that way. It's not really a pull-up, but trust me, you will feel it. Get where you can do, you know, 4 or 5 sets of 10 or 20. Walk 5 days a week for 30 minutes. If you're close to diabetes, watch that. If you're having trouble with your heart, watch how amazing that is with no drugs. I do recommend at the beginning to go to a Walmart and get just some of those bands. You know, they got little handles on there you can step on. You can do curls. You can put them around your back and kind of like you're bench pressing. They're not going to be very much weight. What you're trying to do when you get started is to get your organism, which is you, used to a little bit of stress so it starts adapting. And as it adapts, you can add more stress, and then you can add more stress, and you can add more stress. Then all of a sudden, you know it, and you're 55 years old and you're bench pressing 350 pounds. That's really cool how organisms work. But at the beginning, just get where you can do 100 push-ups in a day. 100 crunches or 100 sit-ups. Sit out of a chair 100 times without having to use your arms or throw your weight around. Have it where you can just pick something up that's somewhat heavy. Even if you just pick up buckets with the handles on there 20, 30 times a couple of days a week, your back muscles will start strengthening. Get where you can do a pull-up. Even if it's not a real pull-up, just do things that your body's not used to doing that's starting to cause a little bit of stress. And when you start off, it should be a little bit of stress. I know everybody wants to be hardcore, and you watch stuff on YouTube, and people are screaming at their arms and demanding them to grow, and they own them, and all this type stuff. The motivation stuff is cool, but when you're starting out, you don't want to do that. I don't even want you the first couple of months to be really that out of breath when you get done whatever it is you're doing. You're just building a base. General physical preparedness. In the conjugate system of lifting weights where I'm doing now, every day professional powerlifters work on their general fitness preparedness, GPP. Pulling sleds, doing push-ups, doing abs, doing stuff like that. Not just squatting, deadlifting, and pressing. Because if your general fitness is weak, everything about you is weak. Getting to do 100 push-ups, trust me, you're way ahead of almost everybody you're going to meet on a daily basis. And then when you go to the gym and you start off with light weights and you build yourself up, dude, you're on the right path. You've built that foundation. You don't have to kill yourself at the beginning. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to always add a brick, add a rock to the castle. That's your goal. Don't overcomplicate it. I would say don't even go looking at a bunch of crap online, because you're going to have people that are just going to overcomplicate anything. You want to be able to do a squatting motion. You want to be able to do a pressing motion, which is a push-up. You want to be able to lift something up, which is basically like a deadlift, but you don't have to worry about having a deadlift bar. You want to be able to walk around with a 5-gallon bucket with water in it. You know, 20 or 30 feet, set it down, walk back. Everything I'm talking about doing is maybe 30 minutes a day. 30 minutes. If you do that, you will not feel the same in 4 months as you do right now. The problem, and I can say this, the problem is when you're really out of shape and you're really overweight, you don't realize how bad you feel every day, because that's your normal. It's your normal to feel like crap. Your joints always hurt. Your back always hurts. Your knees are always feel like they're about to come apart. You feel like you have got arthritis everywhere. I know, dude. I've been there for 20-something years. And then you start getting where you're not feeling that way. Life is just so much better. Because if you're feeling that way now at 50, what do you think you're going to feel like at 60? So you've got the option to feel like a 30-year-old at 50, which you do. Or you can feel like a 60-year-old when you're 40. It's totally up to you. You can go do a Google search on strength training with older adults. You can still build muscle up until you're 80 years old. You can still put on muscle mass till you're 80 years old. But we think that when you get old, you have to be weak. No, we're weak because we don't do anything. If you want to go play with your grandkids, you want to go hunting, enjoy fishing, be able to play a pickup game of basketball or golf or whatever it is you want to do, go quail hunting where you're walking, you've got to be physically able to do that, or it's going to be miserable. And nobody wants to be miserable. I think as you get better in shape, as you get older, and I've heard a lot of people, because I've read a lot of people that are much older than me that are still lifting, they think it changes your brain chemistry back to when you were younger. You start getting healthier. You start looking forward to things. Things aren't such a big drudgery to do. I mean, for a guy, if you're below 55 and you don't know what it's like to wake up with a Woody, dude, something's wrong with you. You need to start doing something, because your body's already telling you, yeah, we're about 80. It's up to you. Start off slow. You don't have to kill yourself. You don't have to, start taking a bunch of supplements and all that. Just get ready and do some push-ups and sit-ups and squats. Now, the other thing I want to end this with is figure out how to clean up your diet. You know what crappy food is. It tastes good. That's the reason we like eating it. Eat more meat. Try to get at least, you know, 1 to 1.5 grams of protein per lean body weight. So, you know, if you're 350 pounds, you don't have to eat 700 because you're not really 350 pounds of lean weight. But you probably want to eat 200 grams of protein. Eat your protein, then eat whatever you want to. You will start losing weight. If it comes out of a box, pick something that comes out of the ground or out of an animal. Pretty simple stuff. I know people want to complicate diet, they want to complicate exercise, they want to complicate all this stuff. It's not that complicated. Move. Lift heavy stuff. Eat real food. Lo and behold, you become a real human again. Not like something that's in a lab with a rat that they're giving crazy stuff to just to see how bad it hurts them. And that's really where most people are today. Start slow. Have patience. Look at this as a long haul. If you're 45 years old and you're way out of weight, what you're trying to do is 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, not next week or next month, or to try to look like a your 21-year-old steroid-induced starving to death ab model. That's not the goal. You just want to be a functional man again. And to be functional, you've got to be able to do something besides sit on the couch and chew potato chips. Up to you. I hope you decide to join this journey with me. I really do.